Nearly half the population of Ethiopia's Tigray region is going hungry. That's the warning from the World Food Programme. Tigrayan leaders are accused of refusing talks with the federal government. So is peace a condition to ending the humanitarian crisis? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. It's being called the worst disaster on earth. And now the situation in Ethiopia's Tigray region is expected to worsen. The UN says the nearly two-year conflict has left almost half the population in severe need of food aid. That's despite a unilateral ceasefire in March, which allowed the delivery of aid to resume. Humanitarian groups say they are still struggling to reach millions of people in need because of fuel shortages. As a result, malnutrition rates have skyrocketed. The UN has called for urgent action to avert further disaster in the war-torn region, where funding is running out fast.
Conflict, extremist groups, coupled with the driest season that we have seen in decades. Four or five rainy seasons have just disappeared. And in the past four decades, the driest we've ever seen it in a long, long time. People are losing hope. But the World Food Program, if we get the support and the money we need, we can save lives and we can bring hope.
Well, meanwhile, the head of the World Health Organization has described the humanitarian crisis in Tigray as the worst in the world. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who is from the region, implied that the international community's silence may be racially motivated.
In terms of humanitarian crisis, I can tell you that the humanitarian crisis in Tigray is more than Ukraine, without any exaggeration. And I said it many months ago, maybe the reason is the color of the skin of the people in Tigray. I haven't heard in the last several months now, even a head of state talking about the Tigray condition anywhere, in the developed world especially. Why? I think we know.
Well, Ethiopia's government reacted to these comments, calling them unethical and one-sided.
The comment is one among many unethical ones that has been made by the WHO Director General, and is not surprising. Using the race card and one's multilateral position to garner the sympathy of the global north for personal partisan politics is quite unbecoming of such a high-profile position. We have no doubt that the United Nations will review the continued breach of the UN's oath of office by the WHO Director General, wherein the oath of office itself clearly requires UN staff to act with impartiality and independence.
Well, let's take a closer look at the latest WFP report. Tigray is in northern Ethiopia and home to around 5.5 million people. The UN says 90% of the population are food insecure and nearly half severely in need of food. It says half of all pregnant or breastfeeding women are malnourished. 33% of children under 5 also fall into this category. And it's not just Tigray. Neighbouring Afar and Amhara regions are also affected. An estimated 13 million people need food assistance, an increase of 44% since January. Well, let's bring in our guests now. And in Ankara, we have Sood Hassan, a Tigrayan activist. In Cambridge, William Davison, senior Ethiopia analyst for International Crisis Group. And in Canterbury is Bizunne Getachew Yemenu, Ethiopia researcher and lecturer at the University of Kent. A very warm welcome to all of you. Let's start by saying and pointing out that Tigray is a very difficult region to access. It's been mostly closed to journalists since the start of the conflict around nearly 2 years ago. Sood, what communication do you have with people in the region and what can you tell us about the situation there?
Well, the situation in Tigray is extremely dire, and we know the communication service is completely out of service, and it's deliberately done by the government of Ethiopia. Because at the early stage, we saw that some media outlets went to Tigray and give extremely clear image what is happening in Tigray, the genocide committed in Tigray. But currently, we don't have, to be honest, a clear communication with our family. We don't have what is happening in Tigray, except the fact that many people are dying because of the draconian siege implemented by the government of Egypt. So basically, what we know so far is that people are dying and the international community is ignoring what's happening in Tigray. As Dr. Tedros says, that this is clear that many people doesn't want to discuss, but it is clearly ignored. But not the fact that Tigray is ignored at this point, but at early 2010s, it is also ignored in Yemen and of course, in Somalia as well.
Mm. So I do want to get back to Tedros's comments just a little later in the discussion. For the moment, let's just stick with the situation and get a clear picture for our viewers as much as we can as to what's happening in the region. William, the Ethiopian government declared a unilateral but a humanitarian ceasefire in March. So why is enough aid still not getting through?
I think that's primarily for two reasons. One is that there has been very heavy restrictions on normal trading relations, so access to the region, the normal humanitarian operations, and also these critically these public services, including banking. So they have been restricted during this conflict. And although there has been some improvement this year, including since that truce in March, because there is only a sort of limited opening of this blockade, it hasn't been able to meet the needs inside Tigray. So primarily we've seen a significant increase in food aid, but through quite an indirect route. And also that has not been accompanied by sufficient fuel to be able to deliver that increased food aid around the region. And then we still have the federal government blocking public services in the region. And this comes on top of a devastating conflict, and a conflict where there was systematic destruction of agricultural equipment, seeds, fertilizers being stolen, also destruction to other vital infrastructure and services, including health and education. And then we have the banking outage as well. So you can imagine this all adds up to a very dire situation. And just because there's been some improvement over the last few months, it means you cannot alleviate all these problems that have accumulated over 2 years for those multiple reasons.
Mm. So how have people been surviving? They've essentially been, people are calling it, been under siege. How have they coped with this situation during this conflict? How have they managed to survive so far?
To be honest, I cannot give you a clear image on this regard because we don't know what is the complete picture in the ground because we have no communication to see what's happening in Tigray. But the information we gathered so far is that it is very dire and hundreds of people, in fact, thousands of people are dying each day. The biggest hospital in Tigray is completely closed because they cannot give any service because there is no medicine, there is no equipment, there is nothing. As William actually clearly stated that even people who actually have savings in their account, they cannot access their account to survive. This is a deliberate action by the government so that they can implement a genocide for the fact that they don't need to fire any bullet to accomplish their actions. So, as I said earlier, this is a completely, we are in a very completely dangerous phase at this moment. Mm. And honestly speaking, we don't know what is clearly happening in the Gaza. So far, we know that thousands of people, especially children and women, are dying each day.
Okay. Bizuna, let's bring you in here because Sue just used a very strong, the strongest term, genocide. He said the Ethiopian government is committing genocide in the Tigray region. First of all, do you agree with that?
It is difficult to make such conclusion because an independent body, which is impartial, should investigate this incident throughout from the very beginning up to the moment by going to the field and investigating who did what, because atrocities have been committed by both sides and different reporters, including international organizations and Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, also mentioned that both parties or all the parties to the conflict have committed as atrocities. So, you know, naming or mentioning or stating the extent of the crime is difficult unless it is investigated by an independent body regarding all the issues going on there. Mm.
Then let's get back to the siege situation. Why are basic services still cut off? Why is not enough fuel reaching the region? Is it because, as Sood says, it allows the pressure to be kept on the TPLF without firing a single bullet?
In this regard, the federal government repeatedly mentioned that it is working, it is best in order to deliver humanitarian services to the region, including fuel and all the essentials needed. Obviously, for a region of more than 6 million population, you know, trucks of food might not be sufficient, and this long, the region have been not accessing any service from the neighboring region or any other country. So, it is difficult to say that it is sufficient. Obviously, it is not sufficient. But the federal government mentioned that the region is trying to use the opportunity in order to, you know, transfer or get access to foreign and local currencies and build up the military capacity required to launch another offense against the federal government. So the problem is both sides are accusing each other rather than, you know, working towards common purpose, especially saving the lives of millions of people in Tigray, especially women and children who are victim of this war. So the issue is not only in Tigray, in neighboring regions of Afar, Amhara as well, and other parts of the country, including Oromia, where there are some issues going on because of the conflict between the federal government and the insurgencies. So this broad issue should be considered, and it should be resolved in negotiations so that people can get access and lives can be saved.
Okay. William, do you see the Ethiopian government prioritising the humanitarian situation there, or is it prioritising ending the TPLF fighting, the threat that it poses?
Yeah, I think as you can see from Bizene's answer there, you know, there are, of course, you know, massive political considerations here. This, you know, terrible humanitarian situation inside Tigray and elsewhere is largely the product of conflict and everything that comes with it, and that conflict's a result of political disagreement. Now, without passing judgment, I think it suffice to say part of the federal strategy here has been to try and subjugate the TPLF, Tigray's leadership, by weakening Tigray overall. And that has involved collective punishment of the Tigrayan people at times. And it certainly does seem that these continued restrictions on, for example, banking services, not allowing the restoration of telecommunications even, that this is a continuation of the political military strategy that the federal government has pursued essentially throughout this war. Now, are there some justifications for that? Of course, people make arguments that because the Tigray region, the TPLF, is in open rebellion, the federal government has no obligation to deliver these federal services. But the result is harm, collective suffering for the Tigrayan people. And the federal government does have an obligation to provide humanitarian services, allow humanitarian services, even into conflict-affected areas. So I think there's no doubt here, really, that the political, military considerations are being prioritised by the federal government, but also by other actors, including the Tigray leadership, at the expense of civilian suffering.
Yeah, that's a good point, Sood. Why won't the Tigrayan leadership come to the negotiating table?
Actually, the Tigray government is open for negotiation. The reason why the military TDF is returned from outskirts of the capital is to give peace a chance. But there was expectation that from our side that there will be unfettered humanitarian corridor and there will be open for a resumption of basic services. This didn't happen. The other thing, for a negotiation to start, I think the basic thing we have to attain is that every forces, they should have to maintain the status quo ante, which means that all the forces from our land of Tigray should have to return to their position before November 3. So I think negotiation only can work that if a trust is built between two parties and there is nothing that we can observe from the Ethiopian government that is going to be leveled as a trustworthy. So still the position of the government is peace should have to be prioritized, but I don't think the Ethiopian government is willing to negotiate by any standard from what we observe. Always the goal post is moved. As actually earlier William said that the bank services, they are not open. The reason why the government of Ethiopia were stating that, the reason was that the government of Tigray is unwilling to give a security for the technicians to fix the problem. But even now, when the government of Tigray provide a letter that guarantees the technicians will be secure, with the diplomats went to the Maqala, the goalpost is changed now. The government of Egypt has now stated that the basic service only will be open if negotiated ceasefire is signed.
Okay.
So every time that we
Bazule, do you just jump in there? Because do you agree with that? Do you agree that the Ethiopian government is changing the goalposts and asking more and more and more of the Tigrayans to come to the negotiation table?
I think the federal government already announced, especially last week, that the government want to start the peace talk as quickly as possible. And it made a call for the regional government of Tigray to start the peace call without any precondition. But as already mentioned, the Tigray government mentioned that they want the West Tigray to reincorporate it and come under the administration of Tigray region, and the services should be started before negotiation. And I assume that the federal government want to make the West Tigray case part of the negotiation than making the precondition of the negotiation. So in this case, it is difficult. The country looks like in a deadlock where the Tigray is not giving up the claim over the land, not to give up, but making it as a precondition for the negotiation.
I mean, Western Tigray is a major sticking point, isn't it? But the point that Sue just made then was that there needs to be some trust installed in the process. And even Tedros, the WHO Director General, said that the ball is in the Ethiopian government's hands.
Yeah, the building trust is very important for a negotiation to be successful. But the problem is these two parties have been in devastating conflict, and I don't think trust can happen overnight unless both parties try to compromise and at least minimize their demands to start dialogue to the minimum and prioritize the people rather than only considering the power conflict as well.
William, let's look at the international attention or lack of it on this conflict, and that statement that we heard earlier from the WHO Director General Tedros saying that, or suggesting that, racism was behind the lack of attention when you consider how much focus is on Ukraine compared to Tigray. Do you think that's a fair comment?
I think I'm not going to respond directly to that. I think you should reach out to the WHO and Tedros for explanation there. I think we're dealing with a very complex political, humanitarian, military situation inside Ethiopia and Tigray. I think there's a number of factors at play. I think with the best will in the world, which we don't have, the external actors would struggle to influence positively some of the positions of the Ethiopian protagonists here, because this is an Ethiopian civil war and there are very deeply felt reasons for it. Maybe just to say, I think, understandably, Tedros is pointing to what he perceives as a double standard in terms of the level of media attention, government attention to the respective crises. And I think those are the sorts of inconsistencies, double standards, we can unfortunately identify all over the place.
Just to look more broadly then, if there is the access available to Tigray, will there be enough international aid to help those people in the region to get out of this state of hunger?
Well, it's a little bit difficult for me to answer that sort of logistics question. I think, you know, the aid supply has been scaled up reasonably impressively as the access has become more available. Of course, you know, as we've been discussing, you know, a massive boost to the Tigrayan economy here, and therefore, you know, that would really sustainably alleviate the humanitarian situation. That would be the reconnection of Tigray to the national economy, both in terms of transport and trade, as well as those services and normal banking operation, power and telecommunications. All these things would be a massive shot in the arm for the situation inside Tigray. And presumably, yes, you know, there would be the ability to scale up the operation further as access improves.
Bazuna, what do you feel about the extent of the international attention, of the international involvement in the negotiating process? Do you feel that if there was more, that would have been further down the road already now? Or, as William says, is this a highly complicated inter-Ethiopian situation?
Yeah, the dynamics is changing. It is very dynamic and complex situation the country is in and has been through since especially November 2020. International pressure might play certain roles, but that pressure should be balanced. The government of Ethiopia continuously complained that the pressure has been on the government, on the federal government only, and the TPLF or the Tigray region has faced no pressure from international community. In this case, for example, they mentioned that we are ready to start a negotiation without precondition, but the TPLF is listing list of preconditions to be fulfilled, and the international community is not putting any pressure and imbalanced in terms of reporting even the war. So in this case, this problem should be entirely solved by Ethiopian internally, but this does not mean that international community has nothing to contribute. Mm. They can play in terms of facilitating the negotiation and putting pressure on both sides and facilitating even humanitarian access as much as possible by closely working with both governments. And the African Union is, in this case, has been playing some role, but that should be, you know, more facilitated. And it sometimes lose momentum. Now the tension is rising between the two groups, and each party are accusing each other, especially over the past few days. It looks like another round of war is in the making. So it is very complicated. It should deserve as much attention from both internal and external actors, but internal actors are more important, I think.
Sue, do you believe that this is a conflict that can be solved internally, or are you also pessimistic that there will be another round of war coming?
Before I want to answer this question, I think I want to return back to the points stated by the panelists. I think I agree with the dynamics of the political dynamics of the current affairs of Ethiopia with both panelists. It is extremely complex. I can agree with that. The other thing is that the pressure is, I disagree with the statement made by Buzuna that the pressure is in the Ethiopian government. The reason why some measures by our context, some pressure is in Ethiopian government because they are implementing a draconian tactic since Tigray. There is no moral in ground that this government shouldn't have to be leveled as such and should be pressured even to our context. The pressure is not enough because still...
Sued. I'm afraid I'm going to have to jump in there because we have come to the end of the programme. Do appreciate your time, all of you, very much. Thank you for joining us. Sued Hassan, William Davison and Bizuna Getachew Yemenu. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, thisaljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.